Live from CBS Radio Studios in New York City, it's the DA Show with your host, Damon Amendolara, featuring
Pat Boyle
and the musical sounds of the Zap Zap Orchestra. Now, ladies and gentlemen, here's DA.
All right, and a happy Tuesday morning to you, everybody. Thanks so much for joining us. Coming your way in 20 minutes, Peter King, senior writer, NBC Sports, is going to drop on by. We'll talk about last night's Monday Nighter. And then in 40 minutes, Andy Reid taking the blame for Kadarius Toney's drops. Does that make sense? Last night, one of the most bizarre games you'll ever find, top to bottom. It begins four plays in when Aaron Rodgers injures his Achilles. He leaves the game in the first series, never to return. We're still waiting for the severity of that to come down, but we are waiting to hear, bracing for the worst, that Rodgers' season could be over because of an Achilles injury. So that is still what we are kind of waiting to see if the Jets have an announcement this morning. After the game yesterday, last night, Robert Saleh did not look optimistic and said it might be bad. That's the first part. The second part is all of the air comes out of the stadium last night, and so the Bills have basically a neutral site game to go up by 17, 24 points, what have you, just kind of put it away, and the Jets have to turn to Zach Wilson. Number one, the Bills don't put it away. They don't score enough points. They felt, and granted, they're running up against a good defense, but it felt completely lethargic by the Bills. And maybe it's because there was no energy in the building. The air had come out after the Rodgers injury. But, I mean, there was just no juice from the Bills. Then we are watching Zach Wilson. And I was told I was not going to have to endure Zach Wilson last night. Instead, here I am watching until midnight. Garbage Zach Wilson. Just absolute trash. He can't do anything offensively. But here's Josh Allen refusing to take the easy win and just keeps throwing interceptions after interceptions, fumbles, and four turnovers. All at the hands of Allen leads to a comeback for the Jets, a crazy catch of the end zone on a touchdown from Garrett Wilson, who physically, I'm not sure how you do that, wrapping your right hand around the defender to tap the ball in the air as you fall backwards, tapping it to yourself to grab it, almost like that was the plan all along. He's insane. Then the Jets lead by three late, 16-13. Bills have one last chance, have to line up for a long field goal because once again the offense looks like garbage on that final drive. And they line up, kick the field goal. It doinks in to force overtime. Then the Bills get the ball, have to punt it away, and the Jets return the punt return for a touchdown, walk-off winner for the Jets. You couldn't believe it. There was so much that happened inside a crappy game, and yet nothing that happened inside a crappy game for long stretches. The fact that this thing was 13-6 midway through the fourth quarter was just a disgrace for the Bills. And the short answer is the Jets season's over. It's just over. Unless Rodgers is going to come back for the final month or 6 weeks of the season, which I don't even know if that's realistic, you're not going to survive with any of the options you have if he's out for the rest of the year. Zach Wilson is not going to be able to do anything. Nick Foles is out there. I mean, come on. Colt McCoy, come on. It's a Jets team that is going to have to hang on by its white knuckles to win game 16-13. But I mean, how often are you going to do that with your defense? That's what happened last year and you went 7-10. So I don't see how you can really expect it to be much better than it was last year. And so in one fell swoop, it feels like the Jets season's over. Hate to say it, but that's the reality if Rodgers is out for the year. And then for the Bills, I mean, unacceptable. Totally unacceptable to lose that game. Totally unacceptable to lose that game in a division where, guess what? Dolphins look pretty damn good on Sunday. Totally unacceptable. 100% unacceptable. So nobody's a winner last night. It's the worst you could feel after a Jets walk-off win. And for the Bills, I mean, it's, you got to look at yourself in the mirror and go, what is that? What are we? What is Josh Allen if he can't fix the mistakes that have haunted him year after year after year, and he does it week one in a gimme game? Total gimme. Elsewhere in the AFC, the Chiefs re-sign Chris Jones. So let me just tell you this. Massive victory for the Kansas City Chiefs. Massive. It's a victory for Chris Jones because he gets a raise. It's a massive victory for the Chiefs. Thursday night happens, and we see a Chiefs team that is one or two plays away from winning that game. No Kelce, no Chris Jones. And for Jones, the most crucial member of the defense, a defensive lineman that creates massive push and tackles for loss and sacks for other guys, is not in there. And you can see that the Chiefs defense just lacks a bite. And here he is in the luxury suite, and he's texting people, and it looks like, you know, this is going to go on for a long time in the conversations around Kansas City. Well, can you survive until week nine? Just got to get back Chris Jones for week nine. He's got to report by week nine to accrue service time this year to move towards free agency. Can you survive until week nine without Chris Jones? He holds out one game, and you have him back on a Monday going into a Tuesday for almost a full work week. Look, for the Chiefs, that's amazing. So now you have essentially a full season of Chris Jones, 16 games of him. Add on that you didn't have to rip up his deal and give him 5 years and $150 million. You didn't give him an Aaron Donald deal. He was in the final year of his contract, and they gave him a one-year raise. So they only are on the hook for this year, and they're going to give him more cash, but it's a one-year deal, and now he's got to go out and prove it again. I mean, the Chiefs are massive winners here. Okay, they got to cough up a little bit more money. Chris Jones doesn't get long-term guaranteed money. He doesn't get some type of long-term deal locked up, security, etc. It's a one-year raise. It's essentially what Saquon Barkley got. Okay, you don't want to be on the franchise tag. You're unhappy. We'll give you a little raise for 1 year. Now, Chris Jones is going to get more than Barkley got in terms of the raise, but, dude, the Chiefs just crushed that. Absolutely crushed that. So the Chiefs are sitting pretty today, getting Chris Jones back into the fold after just one game of a holdout and only giving him a one-year raise. Not even another year guaranteed, another guaranteed year. Amazing. It's a Trash Tuesday. Hit us up on Twitter, DA on CBS, or on the phones at 855-212-4CBS. Frank in Georgia is on the line this morning, and he has a thought on that pulled pork and peach cobbler football food of the week. Frank, good morning.
Hey, good morning, DA. Thank you for having me on. Listen, being in Georgia, Georgia's a peach state. One of my go-to Sunday meals is a pork loin on the grill with a peach bourbon glaze.
Okay, that sounds pretty good. Do you think pulled pork on peach pie sounds good?
You know, I'm going to have to give it a shot myself.
Okay.
I think it'll go okay. It depends. If you're going to put a lot of barbecue sauce on it, I think I would do something with a light vinegar and then have the warm peach pie next to it. I think it would come out okay.
All right, so I might have inadvertently stumbled upon something that actually might be tasty despite trying to make something that was totally disgusting. All right, very good. Do you have a trash today?
I want to trash week one of the NFL. Apart from a few games, it was just watching horrible. Mahomes, Allen, Burrow all lay an egg, it was just travesty to watch. And I think it's just part of these guys not doing the work during the preseason and just playing patty cake.
Could be. Fair enough. Let's trash them, guys.
Splash Brothers. More like the Trash Brothers.
Thank you, Frank. Appreciate the phone call. You're right. Nobody plays in the preseason, which means the week one is usually pretty... It's usually not smooth. It's kind of unpolished football. People were asking me, how the hell could you have taken the under on Dolphins and Chargers? And what Frank just said there is exactly the reason why. The under hit 11 out of, the 16 games, I think it was? Hit 11 times over the weekend, the under did. It was the second highest under of the weekend. The second highest total of the weekend was Chargers and Dolphins. And I wrongfully assumed that it would take both offenses a little bit of time to kick into high gear and that the Dolphins' defense is pretty good. It happened all across the country where NFL offenses looked like crap, like last night. And yet, not for the Dolphins and Chargers. So I picked the wrong one to hit the under on. But that's why. When we come back here on the show, Peter King, NBC Sports senior writer on the Aaron Rodgers injury. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Give me something a little more juice.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Thanks so much for being with us, everybody. Happy Tuesday to you. You can always watch us on YouTube, on Twitch. Go to the CBS Sports Radio channels there. Also, you can watch us at watchda.com and listen to us in hundreds of affiliates nationwide on CBS Sports Radio. Our next guest is a legend covering the NFL. He has done so for Sports Illustrated, NBC Sports, amongst many other amazing outlets. And you now read him as a senior writer and NFL insider for NBC Sports with his Football Morning in America weekly column, which is always awesome. And last night, there's a lot to talk about. Joining us here on the show is Peter King. Peter, good morning.
Good morning, Damon. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Thanks so much for joining us. First thing is, when do you think we'll hear about the severity of the injury to Aaron Rodgers?
I'm sure sometime today, and then the Jets are going to have to pull themselves together. Nice, easy trip for them this weekend, going to Dallas. Nice, easy game for them 2 weeks after that, Kansas City. The schedule gods built a schedule for Aaron Rodgers and the New York Jets. And now that it is apparently going to be Zach Wilson and maybe another veteran who the Jets will sign, who knows, Nick Foles, you know, we'll see. But I think one of the things that the Jets have to do right now is from Robert Saleh, Joe Douglas on down, they can't show any side of a woe is us thing to their players, because you saw it last night, Damon. This is a potentially great defense. And you can say, well, you know, hey, they'll have Rodgers next year. He'll come back from an Achilles, which, hey, at age 40 next year, you never know. But to me, they've got to take advantage of this season. As dubious as the chances may seem right now, they got to take advantage of this season, because now they have proven that they can be a competitive team with this defense if somehow, some way, and I don't know if it's possible, Zach Wilson can make fewer mistakes on offense.
Well, what do you think is the best solution? Is it to put the ball in the hands of Zach Wilson and hope he grows up quick? Is it to sign or trade for another veteran? If you were advising the Jets, what's the solution?
I'd probably try to sign Nick Foles. I know he doesn't fit their offense exactly, but he's a quick study. He has hit the ground running in some difficult situations. And he's played championship football not very long ago. Now, there's no solution. They don't have great quarterbacks on the street right now. Joe Flacco, Nick Foles, whatever. We understand you're not going to be able to go out and get anybody. And plus, you know, who's the second week of the season, who's going to trade one of the four, five, six best backup quarterbacks? You know, the only other option maybe would be to see if you can get Gardner Minshew, because he's a guy who can run around, can make things happen, has played winning football very recently, and the Colts are all in with Anthony Richardson. So, I mean, those, I figure, the only alternatives that I'd probably strongly consider.
Do you think they should make a call to Matt Ryan and lure him out of the broadcast booth?
You know, I don't know. I mean, Matt Ryan was pretty iffy last year playing in Indianapolis. Are you getting the Matt Ryan who was the MVP 7 years ago or something close? And I realize I'm kind of speaking out of both sides of my mouth, because it was, whatever, 6 years ago that Nick Foles was a miracle man. So it's been a while, and they're both older. I don't think calling Matt Ryan is a bad idea. I just don't know what you're going to get if you were to sign Matt Ryan. And I'll tell you this, Damon, Matt Ryan would have been, if Lamar Jackson didn't sign in Baltimore, my money is on Matt Ryan this morning being the quarterback of the Baltimore Ravens. So wow. I think other teams strongly considered Matt Ryan in this offseason. One team in particular, the Ravens, strongly considered him. But I do think, quite honestly, that I think it's worth a phone call, but I might rather have Nick Foles right now than Matt Ryan.
Peter King joins us after last night. Aaron Rodgers going down, an Achilles injury, as you alluded to, with a 40-year-old quarterback. I know this is supposed to be a multi-year run for the Jets and Rodgers, but can we reasonably assume that Rodgers can come back if this is a season-ending Achilles injury at 40 next year?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Dan Marino was, whatever he was, 37 or 38 when he had his Achilles injury, and it really bothered him after that. Now, okay, we're a quarter century later, and you would think that the medical advances have been pretty good so that you would be able to have a better outcome of an Achilles graft or repair, whatever is going to happen. You would think it would be better, but I don't know that. I think the one other thing is Aaron Rodgers, I think, is probably in significantly better physical condition at 39 than Dan Marino was at 38 or 37. Just my gut feeling, especially because, you know, Rodgers is really taking pretty good care of himself. When I saw Rodgers 6 weeks ago in New Jersey at training camp, he talked openly of definitely playing multiple years. I don't think he's going to want to retire. I think he views that Tom Brady has been a game changer for quarterbacks in the sport of football. And the fact is, as we sit here right now, they have a much better chance of getting a healthy Aaron Rodgers on opening day 2024 than anything else. So I think the Jets are going to continue to be all in with Rodgers.
Let's talk about the Bills for a moment here. After the game, Josh Allen said about himself, same bleep, different year. And of course he was angry with himself, but that's got to be a little alarming where the quarterback admits, yeah, I'm making the same mistakes and I shouldn't be making those mistakes. What did you make of Allen's play and then Allen's comments after the game?
Did you see at one point, Damon, they ESPN had a shot after Josh Allen ran the football and got crunched in the middle of the field rather than running out of bounds and avoiding the hit? Did you see that Sean McDermott did this to, yes, Josh Allen?
Yes.
In other words, he's saying, listen, be smart. What have we talked about the entire off season? get out of bounds and don't be such a competitor. This isn't the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl. And so that would worry me. That would the fact that in the first game of the year, that the head coach has got to remind him to be smart. And again, I think Josh Allen is a hugely intelligent football player. Don't get me wrong. But I do think that sometimes with some players, it happened with Brett Favre all the time, the competitive juices just take over. So that's one thing. And I think the second thing is the interceptions with him now really are starting to bother me. And I think should bother the Buffalo Bills. I really thought that last year leading the NFL in red zone turnovers was going to be just a fluky thing because it hadn't been a problem before. But I think Josh Allen is at the mental point of his career where he says, listen, if I can't rely on Gabe Davis, I don't have a great third receiver who I can rely on. And you know, I have to take this stuff into my own hands. That is the stuff I think Ken Dorsey and Sean McDermott, offensive coordinator and head coach of the Bills, need to disabuse him of right now.
Before I let you go, your Football Morning in America column had a nugget on Jordan Love. And Packers fans, we've got a lot of them that listen across the state of Wisconsin. Everybody, boy, pleasantly surprised about how good he was. What did you read behind the scenes, know about the relationship of Jordan Love and the coaching staff or Jordan Love and his teammates? Because I thought it was really interesting that Matt LaFleur noted how much the guys like playing for Jordan Love. What was your context of Jordan Love's big week one?
Look, there's two things about Jordan Love that I think are very interesting right now. Matt LaFleur, offensive brainiac, comes in to take the Green Bay coaching job 4 years ago. And he comes in, but it's like he can't really change much because he's got this super quarterback. And why would you ever want to fix what isn't broken? So, Damon, this is the first offseason that Matt LaFleur has been able to feel like, now I got a quarterback who's a piece of modeling clay who I can sort of shape in my own image. And he talked to me in training camp in a joyful manner of working with Jordan Love on the cadence, on the snap count. And he said, how am I ever going to coach Aaron Rodgers, one of the best of all time, maybe the best at the cadence, at drawing people outside with quick snap count and all that stuff. So, and now he gets to actually coach somebody in doing it. And I think that's just a little bit of a microcosm into the fact that I think that Matt LaFleur looks at this as a golden opportunity to get a guy and to coach him in the McVay, Shanahan, LaFleur image. That's number one. But the second thing is, David Bakhtiari told me something about how, you know, he said the guys on this team genuinely like Jordan Love.
Thought that was
interesting. And think that, want to get in the huddle with him, want to play with him. He's not necessarily a pleaser, but what he wants to do is right now, he wants to make sure that he leaves no stones unturned in doing everything right. And Damon, the one last thing I would say, you know, Aaron Rodgers owned the Bears, and I'm sure that everybody in Wisconsin woke up Monday morning and said, oh my God, this guy, his first game at Soldier Field against a resurgent Bears team, and he goes in there and he owns them just the same way Aaron Rodgers always did. And I don't know, if you're a Packer fan, you have got to think, Mark Murphy, Brian Gutekunst, Matt LaFleur, you know, in the Packer way we trust.
Mm. It's so true. I loved Football Morning in America, this week's column. You led off with Tua. We've got a lot of Dolphins fans as well, so go to Peter's column about Tua and the explosive offense from Sunday for the Dolphins. Great piece, part of it on Brady and what he brought to the Buccaneers. the bold-faced names and the big storylines from the weekend, problems with officiating. It has it all, so go there. It's just a one-stop shop if you're a football fan, such as myself, that is mandatory reading on Mondays. Football Morning in America at NBCSports.com. It's Peter King's column. Peter, I always love our conversations, man. Thank you so much. I appreciate the time this morning.
Hey, thanks for reaching out, Damon. Have a great week.
You too. Peter King joining us this morning here on the show. And just to follow up on what he said about the Packers, you have to remember the context to Jordan Love is this very antagonistic relationship between Rodgers and Gutekunst, Gunty, my man, and LaFleur. And it's just every year it's getting more and more antagonistic. Rodgers doesn't like that Love was drafted. Not that maybe Rodgers was feuding with Love or treating him poorly, but he just didn't like that they were looking for his replacement. Hey, who would? And he didn't like that maybe they didn't do some of the things he thought they should with the roster. And he didn't like, I think, that they counted him out at the end of his career, and so he was going to prove to them that they were wrong. And so there was this resistance that Rodgers had towards the administration. And you can't help but think that it filtered down to everybody, that there was an edge around everything. And then, I'll prove you wrong. I was right. No, we were right. Rodgers last year questioned who was playing, who was on the roster. He questioned scheme. Things were too complicated. We need to simplify. He didn't come to summer camp. He wasn't working out with the squad. We got young receivers. He's frustrated. There was this undercurrent of Rodgers is disappointed, at odds, whatever. And he tried to meld that with this appreciation, this gratitude, walking along with Randall Cobb and looking up at Lambeau Field, and I love the fans. And yeah, I never know with Rodgers what's an act and what's not. He knows how to kind of turn on the audition lights. But the fact is there was some acrimony there. You lift that lid off of the pot, and you have Jordan Love, who all of that goes away and dissipates. Now Jordan Love loves a chance to compete, bided his time, likes the coaching staff seemingly, excited about the opportunity, young, exuberant, finally get a shot. It's got to be a breath of fresh air. It's not that Love is better than Aaron Rodgers. It's just that the health of the relationship skyrockets between quarterback and offense, quarterback, front office, quarterback, and coach. So I think you might see... look, I said they'd make the playoffs. I think the Lions will win the division. I still think that. But after what we saw in week one, if Jordan Love is really effective, you could see the Packers pick up right where they left off and continue to dominate this division for a while under Love. Wouldn't that be something? Standing by with our headline to this morning, kind sir, Andrew Bogish.
DA, the Bills have a healthy QB1 after Monday Night Football, but as you just discussed, it's a struggling QB1.
He's at his own 43. He's got a 3rd-and-2. Looks at a four-man front. There's the snap. Here they come. There he goes. Line drive, far side. Picked off on the far sideline by Jordan Whitehead, number 3.
Kevin Harlan on Westwood 1, 3rd pick of the night from Josh Allen. All of them to Jordan Whitehead, who wears number 3 for the Jets. Allen also fumbled, preventing the Bills from beating the heartbroken Jets in regulation. He did lead a game-tying drive in the final seconds, only to lose in overtime 22-16 on Xavier Gibson's walk-off 65-yard punt return touchdown. Here again, the unhappy Bills QB.
Yeah, trying to force the ball. Yeah, same shit. Same place, different day.
But again, at least all his major ligaments and tendons are intact this morning. Aaron Rodgers suffered a likely season-ending ruptured Achilles on the 4th snap of his Jets debut. Zach Wilson was then less bad than Allen, but gangrene, as we just discussed as well, Peter King, has to be looking at free agents and trades to improve that position.
That is really damning when you say that Zach Wilson was less bad than Josh Allen. Josh Allen could be an MVP. Zach Wilson, as we know, is trash. And Josh Allen got outplayed by Zach Wilson.
Man, Zach's trash, but I don't know how much less trash is out and around there. I mean, I guess Gardner Minshew would make the most sense, but like anybody that's out, Colt McCoy, is he not trash? I mean, I
you need somebody that can just sit in the pocket and be able to go through progressions and make a throw.
Well, they need another body no matter what. But
like
I also,
Zach Wilson can't do that. Like, if you're looking for a quarterback that's going to scramble around like a chicken with his head off and occasionally make a great throw on the run or run for 15 yards at a clip, or, you know, a couple times a game, sure, that's Zach Wilson. But if you need a quarterback that can actually throw the football to competent receivers, Zach Wilson's not going to be that, and there's no amount of time that he was going to watch Aaron Rodgers or learn from him that is going to all of a sudden make him be able to sit in the pocket with presence and be able to throw the football. It's not in his nature.
See, that's where I disagree.
Think he can become that quarterback?
I don't think that Zach Wilson is 100% done. I think that there's still the potential of Zach Wilson being a useful quarterback. Not a great quarterback, not an elite quarterback, but Colt McCoy, any other guy that's third string or on the street right now, there's no upside. They might be safer, but there's still a sliver of upside in Zach Wilson.
So
in my mind.
Both of you guys are right, because I don't think Zach Wilson is necessarily done, but this Jets team can't afford to keep waiting through Zach Wilson's growth. They need a veteran that, as Boyle says, stands there, delivers the football when it's supposed to be delivered. If you have a great defense like the Jets have, and you've got a great wide receiver in Garrett Wilson, and Breece Hall looked amazing. I mean, what's being totally buried is the guy, tore his ACL, right, last year?
Yeah, week 7.
And 10 months later, he's dynamic like that. They have pieces to win. But Zach Wilson, his decision-making's garbage, and he looks like it's the first time he's been on the football field every time. So his career's not over. Bogus is right. He's still super young. Was he 22, 23 years old or something like that? But, like, this Jets team is too good to be waiting around to watch Zach Wilson take his finger out of his butt every single Sunday.
And with that, we'll discuss Ravens running back J.K. Dobbins. He tours Achilles on Sunday. He's done for the year. John Harbaugh said yesterday they will simply promote Melvin Gordon from the practice squad to join Gus Edwards and Justice Hill in the backfield. Steelers D lineman Cameron Hayward may be out an extended period of time. He's reportedly getting a second opinion on a groin injury. Maybe he needs surgery. And Eagles linebacker N'Kobe Dean missing multiple weeks now with a foot injury. And then there's Chris Jones. His holdout is over with a new deal with the Chiefs for the coming season. The agreement reportedly includes incentives that could push Jones's compensation past $19.5 million. The Baltimore Orioles will not loosen their grip on that AL East.
0-2. Here's a pitch. And it's hit in the air, right field deep. Walker back at the track in front of the high wall. He is out of room. It's a grand slam, Cedric Mullins. On an 0-2 pitch.
As heard on O's radio, Mullins put Baltimore ahead for good with that grand slam. They beat the Cardinals 11-5 to remain 3 games clear of the Rays, who have now won 6 of 7. After a 7-4 victory in Minnesota, the Mariners lost to the Angels 8-5 in 11 after the Rangers handled the Blue Jays 10-4. So Texas takes over the final AL wildcard spot this morning. The Phillies and Braves split 2 in Philly yesterday, a 10-8 win in 11 for Atlanta, followed by a 7-5 Philly win. In that nightcap, Atlanta first baseman Matt Olson went deep twice. He's got 50 on the season. The North Carolina Board of Trustees met yesterday to discuss possible legal action against the NCAA over wideout Tez Walker. He was denied a waiver to play this season as a second-time transfer. The NCAA no longer gives those out easily, but only began doing that after Walker was enrolled at Chapel Hill. And both Diana Taurasi and Brittany Griner say they want to play again for the Phoenix Mercury next summer. Only Taurasi's under contract at the moment. Phoenix just finished one of its worst seasons ever. DA, back to you.
Excellent. Thank you, Bogues. It is a Trash Tuesday, so keep sending your trashes. Tweet at me, DA on CBS, Foley, Ohio. The Bills need to do everything in their power to keep Diggs around as long as they can. Week one's always an overreaction, but Allen was straight trash making rookie mistakes. He only looked good when he was targeting Diggs nonstop in the fourth quarter. Trash Josh Allen.
Oh, break out the hazmat suit.
Thomas in the 802 doing the same thing, trashing Josh Allen, maybe a little less time on the golf course, shooting commercials, dating actresses, and believing your own hype. You laid the biggest turd of your career last night, letting down one of the biggest fan bases in sports history. Hashtag trash.
Beep, beep. Sanitation just arrived.
Andrew tweets, I'm trashing your Twitter pic, DA. You look like a Muppet. Trash it.
Please keep your social distancing.
Waka waka.
That's Adam rough.
Well, it's the least of what Mraz is getting these days, man. Adam, the former bath guy, is trashing owners of multi-billion dollar franchises like the Jets, Giants, Rams, Chargers for not building your own stadiums and instead share with the other team in your city. Hashtag no home field advantage.
Trash overflowing landfill.
Steve in Severna Park, trashing store and restaurant owners who don't have their employees say thank you to their paying customers. What's going on here? Trash them.
It's the landfill. Overnights in El Paso.
Swamp butter, hot sauce, bobcats,
moonshine.
Thank you. Have a nice day.
Peaches.
Peaches. Pulled pork. Peaches.
Peach cobbler. Peach pie. That's like that song. What is it?
Peach iced tea.
No, ice cold beer. Down. Instead, you just go bobcat, swamp butter, moonshine, and some pulled pork and peaches.
And can we throw in millions of peaches? Peaches from little present to the USA.
That's right.
Too old for you guys?
I thought you were doing Justin Bieber. My peaches down in Georgia.
Now, I don't know that one.
Oh, yeah. That's a good Bieber song. But, yeah, Presidents of the United States. We do a little lump here maybe here soon, folks.
I think we've stumped Kevin Wall.
I was going to say, Kevin Wall, I saw him post this. Wall, did you do a cross-country trip to go see Bruce and then Bruce canceled his whole tour?
Yes, so
correct. It was more the Rust Belt than it was the entire country, but
so the plan was, I was gonna go to Toronto with a couple friends, but unfortunately
See Bruce.
No, so the show was in Syracuse, and then we were gonna go to Toronto after. But let's just say one of my friends is not welcomed in Canada at the moment.
It's very on brand for the Wall gang.
So I flew to Rochester, where my friend lives. 2 hours after I land, we get word the show's canceled. Then, you know, we're trying to figure out what to do next. Since we can't go to Toronto, since we can't go into Canada.
This is not going to be your trash, right?
No, okay. Don't worry. And then one day in Pittsburgh, one day in Cleveland, and then...
To go see Bruce in all these places?
Yes.
Okay, so you were going to go to Rochester, Pittsburgh, and Cleveland to go see Bruce.
No, just to Syracuse, but we made it like, you know, like a long weekend. Like a long weekend
getaway.
Yeah,
I think moving around, it was plan B without Bruce, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, but I felt like I was on plan D and E.
You were going to vacation in Pittsburgh and Cleveland. That makes sense. So that got scrapped, and you dotted the map, and then what did you end up doing?
We just went all over the place. So we did like a boat tour in Pittsburgh. So that was cool.
The hesitation means they just went to strip clubs every night.
Did anybody else get banned from any other countries on this trip?
I know of, but okay. I'm good. I'm in the clear.
You're fine. All right, good.
That's all that matters.
So your original intention was to go see Bruce Springsteen in Rochester, New York. And it ended up that you went on a boat tour in Pittsburgh.
That is true.
And then had to fly home from there through Charlotte, correct?
Yes, and then my flight got canceled Sunday due to bad weather in the New York City area. So...
I had to wait till yesterday to get home, but the only flight available from Rochester was to have a four-hour layover in Charlotte. So, and then I got home.
So originally, Kevin Wall was going to go see an American legend perform a live concert. He ended up on Jack Lambert's tugboat outside of Pittsburgh.
In the Allegheny.
And meanwhile, I saw Aerosmith on Saturday night, and Steven Tyler apparently sang out his throat. He's on rest now for a month because of bleeding vocal cords from Saturday. So our guys are just falling apart these days.
Oh my God!
Was he gonna do some Mongolian throat singing?
I don't know, man. Wow. But just go home. You guys are old. We're good.
Really?
You know, I know it's kind of a joke, you know, but I'm serious. I got the worst luck when it comes to things. I really did when it comes to travel. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes getting ready for work, slipping in the shower, breaking your nose. You know. I'm bad luck, Brian. I'm telling you.
I got a feeling we got a Kevin Wall travel theme trash coming up next hour as well.
Exciting. Stick around for that. When we come back here on the show, Andy Reid's taking the bullets for Kadarius Toney, DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Do we have any idea if other animals can get chlamydia?
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
It's the important questions we ask around here on the DA. Welcome back. You can listen to us in podcast form. We're going to record the PGP tomorrow morning, the show about the show. So for now, listen to us the full 4 hours or the best of the show. Last night was a bizarre day, bizarre night at MetLife Stadium. Jets get the win in walk-off fashion, but Josh Allen was disgraceful after Aaron Rodgers went down and the Bills get an L they had no business taking. Also, in the AFC, a bizarre week one where favorites like the Chiefs and the Bengals looked really rough. The Bills' offense specifically looked like trash, and you wonder who that opens up the door for. For the Chiefs, Kadarius Toney specifically was really bad. He had one of the worst big opening weekends any wide receiver can have, with drop after drop after drop, and one of those leading to a pick six, which essentially won the game for Detroit. But Andy Reid took the blame on the drops of Kadarius Toney. I mean, you talk about a player's coach. Andy Reid took the blame for putting him in there in those situations without a full offseason to work through because of his injuries. And he says, put that on me. That's on me. I shouldn't have put them in that situation, etc. And I'm just like, man, the fact that Andy Reid, after winning two Super Bowls, and certainly has a stature well above Kadarius Toney, and Toney just, I mean, okay, he might not know the offense all that well yet, but the ball's in his hands. Reid owning that is pretty remarkable. He said he missed all of training camp. Honestly, the first punt return pre-practice on through, so he literally had no camp until the last few days when he got back here, and we measured that. We didn't give him a lot. We didn't give him enough. I got to look in the mirror on this one, Andy Reid said. I probably didn't put him in the best position there because he doesn't drop the ball. That's just not his deal. He's very secure. What Andy Reid's doing here is trying to protect emotionally an emotionally weak kid. That's just the deal here. And Kadarius Toney's going to take the brunt of this, rightfully so, because the ball was in his hands. But also that the Chiefs know they need Kadarius Toney, that he's one of their only wide receivers with first-round talent, first-round grades. Now, Toney might not have been able to put it all together with the Giants or even now with the Chiefs, but he's their greatest potential in terms of a big play threat. And they've had to replace wide receiver after wide receiver over the years, whether it was Tyreek Hill, now it's Mecole Hardman. They've lost a number of guys, Juju Smith-Schuster. Now they're going to do it again, and Tony's got to be the guy. So he is protecting Toney with the knowledge they need Toney. And Toney's a weak-minded individual, and Reed's going to take the bullets. But it's ludicrous to think that the drops are Andy Reid's fault. The ball's in your hands, dude.